all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Thank you, Don Rue, and welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday. Welcome to February. January is behind us now. It's now February 2023, first day of the month. Coming up this hour, we'll talk to my former state Senate colleague, Julie Lassa, who is now the Wisconsin State Director for Rural Development at the USDA, which is investing $20 million to improve and expand the electric grid in rural Wisconsin for some work that will be done by a couple of Wisconsin-based electric cooperatives. And Julie will tell us more at the bottom of the hour here. Also, as we always do on Wednesday, we'll talk to Todd Alba at the end of the show and talk a bit about the way the controversy is running at UW-Richland Center, about probably closing down the campus and the passionate feelings that have stemmed from that and where the whole process goes from here. If you'd like to reach the show, you can call 844-967-2789. If you haven't written that down yet, you should, because it's not just for this show, but most of the shows on Civic Media. If they're taking calls, you can call up 844-967-2789. And then for this particular show, if you want to send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And by the way, starting next week, either Monday or maybe Tuesday, we're going to start some new software here that if you're watching the video feed of this on Facebook or Twitter, you'll be able to see that address and see those phone numbers and see the names of our guests and other graphics. And if you're watching the video feed right now and you look at Aaron's face and my face, you can tell we're both, you know, a little frightened about this. We have mastered Zoom, and yet we're moving on to something else here. And I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be fun. But again, you look at both of our faces and we're like, okay, I guess we're going to do this, right?
At the same time, it is definitely, it's going to make it look a lot nicer. And It's still pretty easy to use, I think. But
I think so. I was practicing with it last night. And yeah, I think it'll, I don't think it'll happen too often that I go to pull up one graphic and, you know, pull up something totally different. Now everybody can see my email inbox or, you know, something like that. But we'll give it a go and we'll see how that works out for everybody. We will cover some headlines in the news coming up in our next segment. And then, like I said, Julie Lassa coming up after that. But I also wanted to review some of the things that the Up North News crew is covering these days. And we mentioned several times that you can see stories over at upnorthnewswi.com. But we actually put even more stories on our Facebook feed and on Instagram as well. So search for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI so that you get the right Up North News, because there's other states that have taken on that name as well. But then in the Up North News Facebook feed are stories that we only put there because they're they're quick little hits. And like this one, you see this photo, this gorgeous photo of a McDonald's. It looks like a lodge. And it is a McDonald's. And if you've never seen it, it is the McDonald's in Wisconsin Dells. And Architectural Digest has named it one of the 13 most beautiful McDonald's in the world. And what sets it apart? Well, the Architecture Digest talks about how it leans into local culture with this log cabin style. It includes a wood-carved bear, a mounted moose head, and it's on a list along with McDonald's locations in Portugal, Australia, and the Netherlands. And so look for that, along with plenty of other stories in the Up North News feed on Facebook. Yesterday, we were talking about the commercials about how Jesus gets us, and some people that think that this is a good way to help burnish the image of Jesus Christ, others saying that it doesn't do enough to take responsibility for what Christians have done, some who have not acted very Christ-like in the way that they do things. Gary wanted to share an opinion on that. Gary, good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I was on the way to the doctor yesterday. I was listening to you about talking about a Super Bowl commercial about Jesus. Now, I used to be, my my background is I used to be a Democrat up until Reagan. Reagan was the first Republican I ever voted for, but I grew up in a Democrat family. My parents were divorced when I was five, so we didn't really have a lot. Mm-hmm. When I got married, I was a Republican. That's when I became a Republican, and I'm a business owner right now. I own my own heating and air conditioning business. Now, the thing is this. When I was a Democrat, I hated Republicans, and I would just punch the lights out of them. But when I ended up becoming a born-again Christian and switched over from a Democrat, now, I'm not saying that there are no born-again Christian Democrats at all, mm-hmm. but I'm saying, mm-hmm. I'm talking about for me personally. My whole mindset on punching people out totally changed. So now I can talk to anybody about politics or religion with never getting in an argument at all, because I want to live a Christ-like life. I believe that I want to be like, what would Jesus do in this circumstances? And that's why I have to keep saying to myself, what would Jesus do? But one thing I was a little concerned about what you said was, you mentioned about Franklin Graham, and you put Franklin Graham in the category that.
Okay. Hey, Gary, can you hang on for 2 minutes? We're up against a commercial break. Can you continue that thought on the backside?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Gary, hang around for 2 minutes. We'll continue this conversation and have more headlines around Wisconsin, and then Julie Lassa and Todd Alba yet to come on a Wednesday morning here on Up North News Radio. We will be right back. Hey, if you ever miss a day and you want to catch up on the show or listen back to something, you can always do that at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. Go to shows, click on the show you want to follow, and it has a listing of all of our recent shows hour by hour. And you can click on any one of them as a podcast or subscribe to the podcast as well. This hour, we have a call from Gary out in Sussex talking about the Jesus Gets Us TV commercials and comments about, well, I guess the full range of Christians, because it takes in the full range of behaviors, beliefs, tolerance, what have you. And Gary, you were just starting to mention Franklin Graham when we ran up against the commercial break. So I'm sorry if I interrupted your train of thought, but
no,
go ahead.
No, that's fine. I appreciate the fact that you're letting me even be on the air. I call up a bunch of times, and I know Mike Krupp personally, and he also knows me. We went out to dinner together, and some of the other guys I went out also with. But the thing is, you put Franklin Graham and Republicans all in the same sentence, kind of in a bad light. Now, the Republicans that I know that are born-again Christian ones, or and if you call yourself a Christian, anyway, I just use the word born-again because that's what happened with me. I don't know any of them that hate Democrats and argue with them and everything else. They're all basically the way I feel. I mean, I'm a nice guy, and I call up, and I've called up probably 400 or 500 times in the last 3 or 4 years and never gotten an argument with anybody, ever. And if you know what it's like to call up on a station that's basically the opposite of the way your beliefs are and thoughts on political stuff, it's tough, and I've gotten a lot of grief. I get off the air, and they call me idiots and everything else, and, there's, where's the tolerance there? But I just want to know why you put Republicans and Franklin Graham all in a bad light in one sentence, and I just want to hear what your explanation is. And you have a right to your own opinion.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate that, Gary. Thank you very much. And, again, what you're seeing here is something that, we try to do in our day-to-day lives. Again, you and I, and any of my friends and neighbors can have very deep-seated values, very deep-seated views on things, while at the same time loving our neighbor, even as we disagree. I have neighbors who would, I'm not going to say take a bullet for me, but who would do almost anything to be helpful to me. And yet I know that as a candidate, they went in that voting booth and they did not vote for me. And yet we're still friends because of that difference in values. But that passionate feeling that I have about my values and they about theirs makes neither one of us any less human. Unfortunately, I guess is the right word for it, when you're in the public spotlight, it does make you an easier target. It does make you, in a sense, fair game. And so if I criticize somebody like Franklin Graham for endorsing Donald Trump, saying in 2016 that God was behind Trump's election in 2016 and that Trump defends the faith, the same Franklin Graham who expressed doubts as to whether Barack Obama is a Christian because his father was born a Muslim, that to me is absolutely fair game to question Barack Obama's faith and yet say that God wanted Donald Trump to win because he better expresses the Christian faith. I don't know that I could disagree with those two positions any more than anything else in the world. I respect his willingness to have that opinion. I praise his audacity to express it, but he also would respect my right to say that that strikes me as absolutely bonkers. Now, as we always want to be quick to say, it's not every Republican, it's not every Democrat, it's not every Christian. We always want to assume that people are painting with a broader brush than we mean to. And a lot of times, if you hear me say Republicans, that's only because I didn't take the time to say Republican politicians or certain Republican politicians, because I am very cognizant of not wanting to offend or denigrate my neighbors and friends whose opinions I respect. But if we were up on a debate stage, yes, we would be debating, but I'm not in any way meaning to paint people with the broadest of brushes. And I frankly appreciate you giving me the effort to better pinpoint one of my issues with Franklin Graham. So Gary, having said that, do we feel like we both have a respectful handle on each other's position?
Of course, I believe that you have a right to your opinion. But you can't base it. Franklin Graham is a good guy. Now, mm-hmm. if he said one thing to you about something that you totally disagree with, you cannot paint the whole brush that one thing he said makes him bad. Okay, now, the thing is, he went to Reverend Wright's church. Now, did you ever hear this guy preach?
Absolutely. And I also know that former President Obama distanced himself from that, in much a way, I would have liked to have seen Franklin Graham distance himself from some of the hateful things Trump said. And now, by the way, to Franklin Graham's credit, he has said he is not going to endorse Donald Trump right away, that he's going to wait and evaluate things. And I tip my cap to him for keeping his powder dry and not just blindly holding on to Trump no matter what. So I want to quickly add that good thing as well.
Well, let's tell you what. We had a good conversation today. I really appreciate it. And I think that you are the kind of person that could sit down and talk to most Republicans, not just with me, because it's easy to talk to me because I don't get in arguments. I just won't let myself. But I do like listening to you. I don't call up a lot of times because I don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. I start work early, but I do appreciate your show and, someday I'd like to meet you face to face.
I'm sure we can arrange that, Gary.
I'm way down here, you know.
That's okay. I get down there every so often, and we'll look for some kind of an event or a reason to do that, Gary. If you're running a business, like you said, you have more guts than I do. I do not have that entrepreneurial gene, and so yeah, we'll continue to have respectful conversations. And I really appreciate the kind words. So I hope you have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
All right. There's Gary from Sussex. And again, I think that I almost feel like I set Gary up for that. I didn't mean to, but I think that really right there gets at when people said, you know, Pat, do you want to do a radio show and do you want to take callers? Yeah, because we may have conversations like that. He's not going to change my way of thinking on Franklin Graham, at least from a political standpoint. Now, I've seen the commercials where Franklin Graham talks about. Forgot to turn off the ringer on my phone here. I've seen the commercials where Franklin Graham is talking about turning your life around and praying for salvation, and he offers a little prayer right there in the commercial. And if that motivates anybody to have a better sense of peace, to turn their back on some of the chaos of their life, hey, that's fine. That's wonderful. You know, it, again, we're like anybody. There's nobody you should agree with 100% of the time. Not my wife, not anybody. But I think that in a show like this, we can have those conversations that last a little bit longer than 30 seconds, and that allow us to explain where we stand and why we believe the way that we do. And that was the point of yesterday's discussion on the Jesus Gets Us ads, is that for some people, those ads are perfect. They're right down the middle from what they would want an ad like that to look like. Others would say, no, it needs to go further in criticizing people whose, you know, Christian engagement, shall we say, is beyond the pale and crosses into, you know, bigotry, racism, misogyny, what have you. And then there are other people who think, no, that if you're going to do an ad campaign on religious values, it should be stricter, I guess, would be my word. Less welcoming might be my word, but that's what other people would like to see. And we can handle those issues here. And I appreciate the calls that come in so that we can do that. All right. I mentioned we were going to hit a couple of other headlines here. And out of the state capitol, this is some good news. There's no other way to put it. It is good news that Republicans in the legislature signaled yesterday that they may be willing to spend more money to address PFAS contamination, especially after new research showed that the toxic chemicals are now being found in the waters of Green Bay. Now, we've talked about PFAS a lot on this show, the so-called forever chemicals that have come to be in the water system through many ways over the decades. We are just now discovering them, discovering their dangers, and that we need to do more to discover where they are, and then to either, you know, clean them up or, you know, isolate and mitigate the circumstances of PFAS contamination. That costs money, and it leads to the need for new rules and regulations. Republican legislators, by and large, have been pretty consistent in opposing a lot of that direction. Sometimes the reason is financial. Sometimes the reason is that they are looking to back industry. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce has come out hard against better regulating PFAS. But apparently PFAS being found in Green Bay was a bridge too far for some. It showed them the extent of the problem, and they say they're willing to do more to help address PFAS pollution. Now, again, those were comments said in a committee hearing yesterday on the subject. Whether that actually turns into funding and adequate funding in the state budget, well, that remains to be seen, and we're going to follow that. Meanwhile, Republicans had put two things on the April ballot, basically designed to gin up turnout in the state Supreme Court election. But now there's been a lawsuit filed by a criminal justice advocacy group that is seeking to block the two Republican measures from appearing on the ballot, arguing that they were not submitted on time to the correct elections officials. And this gets a little detailed, but again, this show is about all the nerds who want to follow the news. So nerds, follow along with me. We already know there is a proposed constitutional amendment that would allow judges to consider more factors when setting bail for violent offenders. That's a proposed constitutional amendment. And then there's a more of an advisory question that asks if able-bodied childless adults should be required to work for their welfare benefits. That one is completely useless because that's already state law. It's frankly an abuse of the referendum process. But again, it's designed to get conservatives to turn out to say, yeah, that should be the law. Well, it already is. But the other measure about setting bail for violent offenders, that's the one where a group has filed a lawsuit saying, and this is the nerdly part, that the deadline to get on the ballot was January 25th. The legislature passed it 6 days earlier on January 19th, so you would think it was in time, but the State Elections Commission did not give instructions to local clerks about what to put on the ballot until several days after the deadline. So now a court has to consider, where is that deadline? Is that deadline with the legislature or is it with the state elections commission? And so we don't know yet if that constitutional amendment will show up on the April ballot until there's been a court hearing. Again, it's a bit in the weeds, but since we've talked about putting measures on the ballot, we want to keep you updated on that potential lawsuit. Julie Lassa from the USDA talks about rural economic development coming up next on Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
You know, if there's one word that I'm glad is in the vocabulary, the common vocabulary more these days, it's the word infrastructure. It's a word that I used as a legislator 15 years ago. And the advice we were always given is, you know, don't say infrastructure. It's, you know, people don't follow that. You got to say roads and bridges, but it's not just roads and bridges. It's roads, it's bridges, it's lead in the water lines. It's sewer lines that are 100 years old and falling apart, and it's the electric grid. And it is not something that you just put some wires in the ground or on some poles and call it good, because there's always ways to deliver electric and broadband and other services better. And then there are things that have to be repaired or replaced. These things cost money, and to some degree, ratepayers pay that. But also to a degree, there's help from all of us. We all chip in so that we can have an electric grid system that works better. And to that end, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has rural development offices in all of the states. And the state director for Wisconsin for the USDA is my former state Senate colleague, Julie Lassa. And she joins us today. Julie, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. And I love the lead-in song.
we do what we can. We got to be relevant.
A throwback.
Yep. But we we try to be relevant whenever we can here. So the news from USDA is nearly $20 million that's going to help a couple of electric cooperatives to expand and modernize the grid. Do you want to talk first about specifically the $20 million and who's getting that and in what parts of the state? And then we'll get into the broader question of the grid and grid security. But let's start with that specific announcement. And what is that nearly $20 million going to be doing?
Yeah, so I was just really pleased to announce earlier this week that rural development through USDA was investing, like you said, nearly $20 million to help two electric cooperatives here in the state expand and modernize their rural electric grid, as well as to increase grid security. So the first is Oconto Electric Cooperative. They're receiving $12.9 million in a loan, and that will help them connect over 600 consumers and build and improve over 150 miles of line. So there's also, as part of that loan, is $325,000 for smart grid technologies. And that's really important because a smart grid can be a catalyst for broadband and other telecommunication services in underserved as well as unserved rural areas. And in addition, it also helps with improving grid security and reliability. And Oconto Electric Co-op is headquartered in Oconto Falls. They serve over 10,000 consumers and have over 1,500 miles of line in five counties in northeastern Wisconsin. And then somewhere closer by you is Chippewa Valley Electric Co-op. They're receiving $6.5 million in a loan to connect over 570 consumers and build and improve 75 miles of line. And they also, as part of that loan, they'll be putting in smart grid technologies as well. And so they're headquartered out of Cornell, Wisconsin, and they serve nearly 7,700 consumers and have over 1,200 miles of line in four counties in northern Wisconsin. So it's just really exciting to be able to work with these electric co-ops and utilities to provide such a needed service in rural America.
And you and I both know from our years in the legislature, you would talk to your the representatives from your local electric co-ops. You would talk to small businesses, manufacturers, the hospitals in your district, the schools in your district, and every one of those groups or people realize just how reliant they are on that kind of infrastructure, and that if that were to be neglected and just allowed to dwindle or to deteriorate, it's not just a matter of convenience. It's not just that I can download a movie faster to watch, but this is about some of the very critical business that goes on across rural Wisconsin, especially in an age where you can deliver both electricity and broadband service more efficiently than ever if you have a grid that's updated.
Right. And I think that is what's really important. It's not only about better service to individuals and businesses that are located in rural areas, but it's also about improving grid security. And back in July of 2021, the USDA created a grid security division to increase federal collaboration to protect the nation's electric grid from service disruptions as well as outside attacks. So I think, it is exactly what you say. It's about distribution, reliability, and it's not just a nicety to have, whether it's electricity or high-speed internet. It's a necessity in today's world.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think, what's great is for rural development, we have our history is rooted back with FDR and the New Deal. And back in 1935, I think FDR signed the Rural Electrification Act, which allowed farmers to band together to form nonprofit cooperatives to bring electricity to rural areas of this country. And so this has been a longstanding part of our mission, and it's just really exciting.
And by smart grid, again, getting rural America wired and electrified decades ago was an incredibly important thing to do. But when we talk about updating things, this is something that affects all of us as electric consumers, as ratepayers.
Absolutely.
Because that smart grid, as I understand it, basically allows for better monitoring of how power is flowing to the grid so that flow can be controlled, increased, or curtailed to match conditions in an area. In other words, you're reducing the amount of waste of electricity that is generated, goes into the grid, but then isn't needed because it doesn't get to where it's needed. So, you almost have to, when we think of electricity turn on and everything is wired, but it's almost like you have to think more like plumbing. And, you can turn valves this way or that way to get the water where it's needed. But to do that takes these kinds of upgrades that you're working on at USDA.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because people are focused on conservation and efficiency and effectiveness. And this is just one of the ways that we're making investments through the Biden-Harris administration to really focus on making our infrastructure much more effective and efficient. And in the end, it is about that management and really setting Wisconsin and the rest of the United States up for a much better future when it comes to our infrastructure needs and what taxpayers are expecting in terms of higher service and better service.
And there should be more expected as the Inflation Reduction Act kicks into gear and expands the loans and the grants that are going to go for clean energy, all of the things that are going to create jobs, that are going to improve local and state economies, as well as, you know, address the factors that exacerbate a changing climate. So, you know, as these electric cooperatives have been moving away from coal and moving more toward natural gas and wind and solar, it sounds, Julie, like the USDA's electric loan program has a fundamental role to play in this.
Well, absolutely. And then, as you mentioned, as part of the Inflation Reduction Act, USDA will be receiving more than $12 billion to give out as loans and grants to expand the very things that you were talking about: clean energy, transform rural power production, create jobs, and to spur economic growth. And I think that's what's really important, is that this funding will help to make our energy cleaner, more reliable, and more affordable for folks.
Julie Lassa joins us, State Director for Rural Development for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And so let's talk a bit more broadly about what rural development does. And I'm looking at the rural development page that I see here is rd.usda.gov/WI. I can't remember from our last visit. Did you give me an alternate website, or is that the best one folks can go to learn more about you?
That is the best one to learn more about us and our programs. I mean, a related program that we have right now that we're really pleased about is our Rural Energy for America program, or also better known as REAP. So that allows for egg producers as well as rural small businesses to get loans as well as grants for renewable energy systems or to make energy efficiency improvements. So businesses can apply for that. And for our loans, let's see, we have loan guarantees, and that is for, let me look here, up to 75% of total eligible project costs. Wow. And then we also have grants for up to 40% of total eligible projects. So it's a great program. It is meant to help with renewable energy as well as energy efficiency. And if people are interested and intrigued, they can go to our website to find out more.
And the things that the funds can be used for, you know, include, you know, wind generation, small and large, solar generation, small and large, high efficiency HVAC, insulation, lighting, doors and windows. There's no shortage of ways that folks in rural areas can make these updates. And why? It's not just out of the goodness of our heart, you know, but it's also, these are things that if you can improve the energy efficiency of your business, your home, what have you, that's just good for that local rural economy overall. This is direct economic development for a big chunk of Wisconsin.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, business owners that I talk to, they're always looking at how to make their business operate more efficiently. And one of the ways that they can do that is by checking out this type of program, which will help them save money on their energy costs so that they could make potentially more investments back into that business, be able to pay their employees more, or to hire new employees. So it really is just a great program that I hope listeners will check out. And we also have other programs as well, ranging from housing and for single family housing, multifamily housing, all the way through helping communities put in, you know, new sewer and water systems and purchase fire trucks and police vehicles. So rural development is just a fantastic agency. And what we're talking about this morning in terms of energy is just one part of it.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's solid waste management grants and again, all manner of things that can provide assistance. And so when we often hear in political discussions that, you know, parts of rural America think that they're getting shortchanged and overlooked. And the fact of the matter is there's a lot here. It just doesn't get talked about a lot. And so it's so great to get to talk to you, Julie Lassa, about what USDA is doing for rural development. So thanks so much for the visit. Really appreciate it.
Hey, I enjoyed it very much. Happy to be back anytime, Pat.
All right, Julie. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
We will be back with Todd Alba right after this on Up North News Radio.
That was when the sun goes down. We'll be grooving when the sun goes down.
There is a pretty fair chance that you have already heard the audio I'm about to play for you because it has gone so viral. This is the PA announcer at a basketball game in Germantown late in the game where the refs have to make a call at the end of the game as to whether something was a foul or not. While they're discussing it, the parents and other fans in the stands are shouting at the refs, and the PA announcer had just had enough, and here's what he had to say. There's the whistle as the refs gather to talk. I apologize. We started a little too early. Now the refs are talking. And there you hear applause from the fans that got tired of hearing other fans who were getting a little too passionate with wanting to call the game for the refs, taking the attention off the game and more toward, you know, their own point of view on it, which is where I make my segue into Todd Alba talking about UW Richland Center. Good morning, Todd.
Well, good morning, Pat. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. You have been obviously right there at the center of the controversy about the possible closing of the UW campus in Richland Center. And it is a very passionate topic. And I heard you talk about it on Friday after, you know, there was this town hall meeting. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of discussion about your conversation with Jeff Barant, who is now a vice president at the UW system, who you know as chief of staff for State Senator Bob Jauch, who prior to that was basically running the office of Senator Pat Kreitlow. So we are very close, and so I followed this conversation very closely, including a lot of attention on Mr. Barant's salary. Rather mm-hmm. than, you know, the balls and strikes of closing of the Richland Center campus. And I have to say, on Monday, when you came on board and said, you know, look, I might have gotten a little overzealous in my comments, but my positions haven't changed. Mm-hmm. I really thought about that basketball game, the parents who sometimes they just shout, they got to shout. And every so often they have to go, OK, I still don't think that was a foul, but, you know. Maybe I shouldn't have shouted so loud.
Well, you know, I'm a passionate guy. I've been very upfront. I cannot be completely non-biased on this issue because, yeah. My grandmother was the first woman to hold a dean position at UW Richland and literally helped build that facility. I grew up there. I went to school mm-hmm. there. My dad was athletic director there, a wrestling coach there. It's literally in my family's blood. And mm-hmm. more so, even more important than my personal story, is that this is my hometown. And going to that meeting on Thursday night and seeing the earnestness and the pain of the community and Pat, you and I have had the opportunity to kind of be on the other side of the governmental curtain. In other words, mm-hmm. we kind of have seen how the sausage is made on the backside of this. And a lot of folks just don't have that opportunity. And when I heard people like State Senator Howard Marklein and State Representative Kurtz, and quite frankly, Jeff Brandt, the Vice President of Universe Relations, start talking to these people, I'm like, these guys just aren't telling the whole story. They're just not telling the whole story.
Well, that's where I thought we would pick up things from there, because what I got out of the conversation is, for a while there, you did not think that Senator Marklein and Representative Kurtz were being on the up and up about what they knew and when they knew it. But after you talked to Jeff, it became pretty apparent that the UW system, through Jay Rothman, who Jeff Brandt was representing there, had done this in much more of a, shall we say, a unilateral fashion. And you raised a valid point as to whether members of the powerful Joint Finance Committee of the legislature, including a co-chair, should have been looped into that decision even earlier. And so that's the apples, is the decision-making process and how it was released. But the orange is still the closure of the campus itself. And that's where, again, as somebody outside of that debate, I say, I have seen that it appears the Richland Center campus has, shall we say, not been treated fairly. Mm-hmm. But as a taxpayer hundreds of miles away, I think, you know, it's still valid that people are saying, wait, we're paying for a campus that has 49 students.
Well, you missed the whole story, though, Pat. The whole story is that this was set up for failure.
We need to quit focusing on, oh, there's only
49 students. The fact is that this was, and you know this better than anybody else because you've been in the legislature, that the monies were not appropriated appropriately. System did not oversee this well. There was complete mismanagement by the former chancellor, especially Dennis Shields at Platteville, and they had the recruiter taken away. When the local foundation, they have $6 million in the bank. They offered $600,000 to pay for their own recruiter, and Platteville said no. So there are all multiple questions, and you know as well as I do that there is no way that the UW system was going to close. Think about if they had closed UW Eau Claire when you were in the Senate, and they called you up and said, Senator, we're releasing in 24 hours that we're closing Eau Claire. You would have been livid. You would have been on the phone. You would have had people. There's no way
Eau Claire, yes, but UW Barron County up in Rice Lake, which is now the one paired with UW-Eau Claire, that one is the one that's in, you know, my neck of the woods. And look, I mean, we can take an hour on this, but the 13 two-year centers, there's been debate for years and years about what should happen with that. And I like to the point of, should they be feeding into just the nearest four-year campus for the sake of convenience? And instead, you made the point, or one of your guests made the point, it should actually be feeding right into UW-Madison. And that way, those campuses might be better taken care of for students who want to start early in a smaller school.
There's all kinds of scenarios. And the former chancellor of the system and extension, Kathy Sandeen, was on our show and revealed for the first time in public that she had put together a formal proposal for all 13 two-year centers, not to close any of them, but to find unique ways to adapt to, yes, there are changing things in higher education. So again, it's not, we need to quit focusing on, oh, there's only 49, 50, 60 students, whatever it is. What led us here? What sort of mismanagement at system led us to this point? And how do we hold those individuals accountable? And look, I know Jeff Brandt. We worked a lot of times to screw Scott Walker over on the mining and saved it before they Schultz-proofed the state Senate. And, and you know, what I've learned, you know, State Senator Tim Cullen told me this a long time ago, Pat. Anything, when you ask a politician a question, and anything other than no is a yes, and anything other than yes is a no.
You really get to the heart of that. You might be talking about that on your show today.
I think we should cross over and keep talking about it.
I appreciate you visiting on this show so that we've never talked about the topic at all. So this was a great way to introduce it. So everybody have a great day. Hometown Health tomorrow. We will see you come Thursday.